This is Closer Look here on 90.1 WABE. I'm Rose Scott. Food, it brings people together. And on today's program, we talk soul food, Southern living, and chronicle the culinary travels of three women. Naturally, to talk about food, Closer Look senior producer Candace Wheeler and I headed over to Twisted Soul Cookhouse and Pours, located in West Midtown. Our first conversation is about soul food establishments right here in Atlanta, and we're going inside the Taste of Soul Atlanta Festival taking place this weekend.
Hi, my name is Antoine McNeil, and I'm the founder of Taste of Soul Atlanta.
Let me begin by asking you this. Can you define soul food, soul cuisine?
Wow, that's a difficult question. You know, we all kind of generally have a perception of what soul food is, but really when you think about it and you talk to different groups in the South, that common definition can start to veer off into multiple different ways. So here's the definition or the test that I have for soul food. First, you gotta have chicken. Now, it's debatable on whether or not it has to be fried.
You have to have chicken.
You gotta have chicken. It's a staple of America, but in particular, it's a staple of the soul food culture, okay? Now, you can get away with baked or grilled, but you gotta have chicken. And then the next portion is you need to have what I call the cornbread or collard greens test.
Okay, I'm gonna stop you right there. So the question was, how do you define soul cuisine or soul food? And you went with a staple being chicken, uh-huh. And now you come in with cornbread.
Yes.
You're going to make a lot of people mad, you know that.
I know that probably may seem stereotypical, but, you know, what I would come back and say is, what's wrong with that? I mean, why do we often run away from something that should be honored? And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to create this festival. I mean, so often and for so many other cultures, we honor their cuisine. And it seems that somehow in America, there's a bit of a deviation in soul food culture where we don't necessarily dishonor it, but we don't push it forward as something to be proud about. And that's one of the things I wanted to change.
Why do you feel there's this perception that honoring soul food may come with a negative connotation?
Well, first of all, if you look at most large events, most catering events or special events, you rarely see soul food. I mean, you will see other versions of American cultural fare, right? You'll see American grill, you'll often see an Asian American base, because the Chinese food that you're eating is really not Chinese food from China, it's an Americanized version. You'll see Italian-based foods. Very rarely, let's go to the football stadium. Do you see soul food there? Let's go to other places. Now, the one thing that's unique about Atlanta is you can go to the airport and actually get, you know, Pascal's or some other soul food. But that's rare, and I think it shouldn't be. I think, you know, it's a form of fare that is historically rooted in this country. It's amazing food, and we need to honor it and push it forward.
Is there a difference, Antoine, between soul food, soul cuisine, and Southern food, Southern cuisine?
Yeah, that's a loaded question. That is a loaded question. Let me tell you this. I don't like drawing that line. Now, I know everybody wants to, and the reality is that it generally is drawn along race, right? So a lot of folks will look at soul food as African-American-based food, and Southern food as basically a European-American-based food. What I would argue is that the base of Southern food is really a combination of both African-American, the evolution of food in the South, as well as European-American, the evolution of food in the South. So Southern food is for sure both African-American and European-American-based cultural cuisine in the South. Now, with that said, I believe that soul food was then, it mostly came around in the 60s, and was an attempt to, during the Great Migration, where folks really start moving, black folks start moving from the South in greater numbers to the North. It was an attempt to bring some of that culture to the North, and in general, they elevated some of the flavors, et cetera. So you get more flavor and more spice with soul food.
Recipes that have been handed down, that were brought up from the South, that were heavy with, I don't know if you're old enough to remember, but folks cooking with lard. you know, the heavy meals and having one big meal a day. Beyond just the food we're serving, soul food has also characteristics of family, of gathering as well.
Now that's absolutely true. Now the first I'll say, I know some Crisco. So I grew up with my grandma and that lard, and she'd have that little, that tin can there. And I'm like, when are you gonna pour this out? How long are we gonna keep this for? But that's that flavor too. So anyway, I mean, what, when we also think about soul food, you're absolutely right. We think about the family. So if you think about the fact that bringing the food from the South and pushing it or migrating that food culture throughout the rest of the country, it was a rallying cry to bring families together, have that food during meals, and particularly in the African American culture during Sunday meals, right? It became a celebration of family. And so that is one of the defining characteristics from a cultural base, that when you think about soul food, you think about family.
And some will argue, when I think about soul food or even Southern cuisine, I'm thinking a lot about fried foods. I'm thinking a lot about salt. I'm thinking a lot about the fat back and the ham hocks and everything that's added to the greens and the beans for flavor. And then you get into health factors. You know, you also have those characteristics of soul food. One, is that fair?
No, it's not fair. So first, if you look at American food in general, I mean, we're loading up. You know, our quantity portions are, you know, at least, you know, a quarter more than most of in a lot of other countries. And so to relegate that to soul food is really not accurate. But what I would say is that, you know, those spices and those extra seasonings that were added, it's not just soul food. The basis of that was Southern food. Now, the spices were kicked up with soul food, but it was, most Southern food is rooted in the addition of pork and those kinds of things. What I would say, though, is that what we've seen recently in the last maybe 20 years or so, there really has been a shift. So when you think about America and people becoming more aware of food and eating well for health, that has also translated into soul food. So you begin to see the replacement of pork and collard greens with turkey, right? You begin to see some folks saying, okay, let me get baked chicken instead of fried chicken. You know, let me get baked fish or pan-seared fish instead of fried fish. Now, you still gotta have some fried catfish, so don't get me, you can't completely eliminate it. But, you know, there has been that transition, and we've even begun to see vegetarian soul. In fact, there's a vegetarian soul food restaurants here. That's right, in Atlanta. And if you, the other thing to think about is, you know, I kind of was having a discussion or a debate with one of my friends not too long ago about the healthiness of some soul foods. Really, soul food side items, for example, were heavy vegetable base, and not just you know, where they get vegetables. In most cases, they were grown in the garden, in the backyard. That's right.
Fresh
vegetables from the backyard. Now, all that has changed, right, with the mass production and a lot of the GMOs for a lot of the vegetables. But you're starting to see people become more aware. Their markets popping up, even in the West End and in some of the traditional areas that are heavy in soul food. And there's at least a recognition that there needs to be some more healthy options as it relates to soul food, and that's happening.
Speaking of options, here in the Atlanta area, you can go back to the old Pascals, and we know the historical significance of the old Pascals with the civil rights leaders meeting there and strategizing as related to civil rights agendas. You say that here in Atlanta, it's something unique about the number of soul food or soul cuisine themed restaurants.
Yeah, so what a lot of people don't know is that in the metro area, this is the soul food capital of the country.
Now, are you making that declaration, or has there been something official? Is there a resolution? Has there been an executive order signed, or you know this for a fact?
I'm claiming it. So what I would tell you is this. If you look at Yelp, they've made the declaration. Okay, you can compare the number of soul food restaurants in Atlanta, in the metro area, to a lot of the, and soul food and soul related restaurants into compared to a lot of other major metropolitan areas. And what you find is that Atlanta, just add them up, has the greatest quantity. Now, the closest, and it was a close second, is Memphis. But Atlanta, for sure, has the greatest number of soul food restaurants. And when you think about it, it just makes sense.
Are you prepared to say right now during this interview, are you prepared to give one of these establishments, or the granddaddy of them all, are you prepared to designate one of these establishments with that type of designation?
So, Rose, you're trying to get me in trouble.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. So, first of all, I'll tell you that a lot of these, some of these soul food restaurants are going to be at Taste of Soul Atlanta Festival this upcoming Saturday.
So you want people to make their own declaration.
So I want them to make their own declaration, not just there, but throughout the rest of the city. But I will tell you this, that we have a wide number, and really the way to do it is to think about it by category. So how we do it at Taste of Soul Atlanta is we say traditional soul food. There's actually, you know, kind of a Caribbean-based soul food. And then there's vegetarian soul food and so forth and so on. So we're not ready to begin making declarations by category, but we're preparing to do that, and we want to do it right. The other thing is we do have on our website a list of the top 25 soul food restaurants in the metro area. They're not in order, so we haven't claimed a number one.
Are there 25 in the metro area? That's what you're saying?
Oh, there are way more than that. There are way more. People don't realize, once you start looking at that, you're going to say, I can't believe. And we had to, you know, we had a team of individuals that, you know, are in the food-related industry to try to whittle it down. I mean, we were, the number that we had to sift through and restaurants we had to visit to even get to 25 was really challenging.
Was it someone that didn't make the list?
The notes are probably coming. We just published a list. We were doing it as part of the lead up to this year's festival. And what we hope is that, you know, they kind of maybe reach out and look at the criteria, and then they, you know, step the game up a little bit, and they'll be on the list next year.
As we wrap up, what can folks expect other than just sampling some great food at this weekend's festival?
So what we all know is that what goes with soul food is soul and R&B music. So we have, at the Taste of Soul Festival, we have two stages. One is the Gladys Knight stage. Gladys Knight grew up, I don't know if everybody knows this, grew up in Vine City. So we have the Gladys Knight stage, which is our main, kind of our main stage, and then we have the Phoenix stage, which is the second stage. And we have music all day on both stages, and from 11 to 2, we actually have a gospel explosion. We have a kid zone. And with the kids on, we have bouncies, we have a little train. Last year we had horseback riding. We're still debating on whether we're going to bring them out this year. But it's a whole lot of fun all day, and we like people to get out, move, and have a good time.
What made you decide to do this in the beginning anyway?
You know, what's weird is, I mean, I'm an engineer. That's kind of my, that's, you know, one of the things I do. But I believe that everybody should have kind of what they, you know, their work passion, and then their life's passion. And I really love food. So I love to eat, I love food, and I really just believe that that, you know, it's time that we kind of take soul food and we package it and we help people understand it and we begin to share it and we show how great it could be.
With all due respect to Memphis, you say Atlanta, this is the number one soul food capital in the world. In the world?
Well, in the country, which is the world for us. So, you know, yes, definitely in the world. It goes from the country to the world.
Antoine McNeil, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Rose. I appreciate it, too. Wonderful being here.
After speaking with Antoine McNeil, it was time to continue the conversation. I sat down with three Atlanta-based women to talk about their individual journeys within the culinary world. So we're back inside Twisted Soul Cookhouse and Pours, located in West Midtown.
My name is Chef Deborah Vantrese, and food to me is family.
My name is Chef Jennifer Hill Booker, and food to me is the great equalizer.
My name is Tiffany Berrier, and food to me is love.
And Tiffany, I'm going to stay with you. You said food to you is love, but you also have another passion, which is always a complement to food, and that is a fine adult beverage, as we can say. Tell me about how this passion came about for you?
It's a pair, as both chefs said, what food is to them. Food goes with beverage, and just knowing not just what pairs, but what you like to go with your food. It's just an obvious connection, and that's my special. Drinking. Casual drinking. I come from a drinking family. I say that comfortably. Anyone who's ever been to Louisiana knows, or if you do have a drinking family, we drink for fun. We don't drink for a suppression. It's all about love, as I said. So a toast every time, and a cheers, and a high five, a hug. Alcohol has always been around the house, so I was sipping it when I shouldn't have. And just the curiosity kept going and going, so I just started to read about it more, drink it more, and here we are. I still wonder how I got here sometimes.
Chef Booker, you said food is the great equalizer.
To me, I feel as long as a person has food in their home, if they know how to cook the food, purchase it, grow it, harvest it, then you have that foundation. And from that nutrients, from the pride of being able to make a meal for your family, you can accomplish anything else. But if you don't have that food, then all the other equalities of the world, I think, are bigger and heavier. But if you have that solid meal, whatever it is, beans and rice or foie gras, you can get up and go and handle your business of the day.
And Chef Vantrese, you said food is family. I take it you grew up with that, with food being a part of your upbringing and your family.
For me, yes, food is family. I think our beginnings, you know, our good feelings usually are centered around food. And that usually starts at home with your family. You know, it produces great memories. You know, and like Tiff says, there's gonna be a beverage and there's gonna be good food. And in my cooking process, that's what I'm trying to relay. You know, that's what I think we all do. It's like we cook from our heart, and it came from the beginning, which is our families.
I want to talk about regions and where you all grew up and how much of that influence comes out in what you do. Chef, I'll stick with you.
Okay. I grew up in the Midwest in Kansas City, Missouri. I think, to be honest, you know, soul food came about in a lot of different ways. I moved to Atlanta about 33, 34 years ago. So I've spent the majority of my life in the South. It was kind of an eye-opening experience for me to come to the South and understand where a lot of those recipes originated from. I think I just took it for granted. You know, mama cooked it, grandma cooked it. But the history of them, their lives, how this came into play. You know, there's still recipes that I cook. I have no idea how I know how to do this. It just started, you know, with somebody who was from the South that eventually got to Kansas City, you know, and then the next thing I know, it's on my table.
Chef Booker?
Yes.
Region?
Oh, gosh. I always say I'm from everywhere. So I was born in the Midwest in Michigan. I lived there in New York. Florida, went to college in Oklahoma, but family has always been the Delta, Mississippi. And that's where my mother's family and my father's family are from. I spent every holiday and summer from birth to about 17 when my grandmother says she can't come for a while. But for me, Southern is my root. That's my heritage, that's my place to go to for food. And then having traveled, I spent a year in Paris at Le Cordon Bleu and I found Southern food. And French food are really, what I say, is different sides of the same culinary coin. And people say, well, what do you mean? I say, well, if you know your history, not just food history, but the history of the Americas, slave colonized Americas, and we cooked the foods our owners ate. And that food bled into our history, our African history, our Native American history, and they've come together. And so for me, regionality is where you're from, where your people are from, and perhaps even the people that own them, where are they from? Mm-hmm. And this is my cuisine.
I love saying I'm from the Bayou. I'm from the Bayou. I'm, again, to to just Louisiana itself, we are, and I say this casually because we're from the Bayou, we're mutts, and we're a mix between Spanish, African, French, and there's going to be some kind of maybe Italian or European connection. So being from Louisiana and then growing up in Houston, where we don't eat soul food, I didn't even know what that was classified as, because grandma said soul food comes from your heart. So us not having much, which what we thought, but we had everything. So I grew up with an uncle that was a butcher, and we grew up where, you know, we grew collards and outside, and these are my chores. This is what I gotta do. It's summertime, go get dinner. That was the best part of how I grew up and how I learned how to eat. And then as I got into the culinary world and thinking that I want to learn so much more, everyone's like, you know everything. I'm like, no, I don't know a thing. I want to know more, you know. And then you travel abroad and you notice other countries and other people that are cooking exactly what we as colors do. So I, the South all day long, Louisiana, the Bayou, that's what I claim for sure. And it's I wouldn't change it for the world.
Earlier in the show, I asked Antoine about how he defines soul food or Southern cuisine, and I'm gonna ask the same question of each of you. Chef Booker, how do you define soul food or soul cuisine?
This is gonna be touching.
Okay.
Give it to him. Give it. This is touching.
Well, it's when you say soul food and then you say Southern cuisine, to me those are similar but different, okay? Southern cuisine is food you cook maybe in the South, Southeast, South. Soul food, as a Black woman, as a Black chef, is food that came from Blacks in the South. That was my understanding of soul food. I know everybody says, oh, soul food comes from the soul, and you could be Jewish or Italian or German, and that's your soul food. But for me, as a Black woman in America, soul food was food that Blacks cooked in the South. Now, it has evolved to be and mean other things to other people, and I can cook soul food, which in my mind is what my grandmother and my mother cooked when we were in Mississippi. Or I can cook soul food, which I've added my French twist to it. Is it still the soul food that I grew up eating? Not so much, but I can still call it soul food. And it makes me think, I remember cooking dinner for my mother, and I cooked pinto beans, and I think I probably had cornbread, and I probably did some chicken. And she says, well, do you ever cook soul food? And I was like, well, what are you talking about? We got it all right here. But the way I cooked it was different than the way she grew up cooking and eating it, because it was maybe a little lighter, or the spices were a little different. Maybe it was a little healthier. So I think soul food is where we've come from in cuisine, and maybe Southern food, I don't want to say is a watered-down version of it. Maybe that's just a natural evolution of where food goes when everybody cooks it. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Soul food, for me, it's not even defined by African-American culture for me. I've traveled all over the world, and in my opinion, you know, I have found a lot of dishes in a lot of different countries that represent their soul food. You know, again, it comes back to the experience, to the family. It's that food that came from that grandparent, from their heart, that they wanted you to have something that was filling, nutritious, and tasted good. So what I do is kind of combine all those travel experiences. I've had the opportunity not just to eat in restaurants, but to eat in homes throughout the world. And it's a different vibe when you're in the home as opposed to what you're getting in the restaurant. So what I represent is, you know, that home cooking, you know, kind of taken to another level. As far as Southern cooking, again, you know, once I got here, I was, you know, kind of surprised that this is Southern and this is soul. You know, for me, I kind of agree with Jennifer. Southern food is what you eat in the South. Soul food has traveled throughout worlds, you know, throughout generations, you know, so it's not just, you know, what is indigenous of the South, because as we go through different regions, we start picking up things that are in that region, and they become our soul food too. You know, so I do think there is a difference. I do also feel like a lot of the Southern food is a duplication of what soul food is. And I take a little bit of offense sometime that we don't call it what it is. It's like you walk around and you call it Southern, but I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. You know, I've never heard of you cooking an oxtail in my life. You know, I've never heard of you cooking head cheese. I've never heard of this. And now all of a sudden it's become your Southern cuisine and not our soul food.
How does one come behind that? I agreed. I am not even going to enhance that even more. I'm just gonna dust over that and say yes, yes, and yes, and yes. All of that is true, and because that's our industry and we hear it and we see it, but we are that. It's like, come on, everybody, you know, labels and titles of what it is, and that, and let's say it, like you just said, Chef, it is what it is. If I see one more oxtail taco, I'm gonna scream, and I'm like, since when? And you know, and there's just so much more in between it, so it's hard to come back behind what you just said, Chef, because she said it.
So do you think that in this day and age, and there's this phrase that's been going around about cultural appropriation, do you think that soul food has been appropriated by other cultures and not given its proper acknowledgement or its proper place in history?
Completely, okay? You know, right now there is a huge push in the food industry towards sustainability, okay? My ancestors were sustaining a long time ago. I've gone to places and, oh, the big deal is from the rooter to the tutor. Now that's in fashion. We were eating pig's feet, you know, pig snouts, pig ears for years. You know, so yes, I do feel that's exactly what has happened.
It's funny you bring this up. Deborah and I have had this conversation and we kind of have to step back from it. And I've asked the question from other chefs, usually European men, oh no, there's no such thing as cultural food appropriation. How can you prove whoever made it the first time? And I'll step back sometimes. But I have to say, as a female, black female in the industry, I get, ooh, soul food is hot right now. Ooh, that's hot, right? You're in right now. That's hot, right? You should write that book or write that story or tell your story because it's in right now. And I have two cookbooks, one which has braised chicken feet and the other which has pig feet. I grew up eating both. I love it. And it's hot right now, which is interesting. The plate is beautiful, the photography is gorgeous, but at the end of the day, it is a chicken foot and a pig trotter. And it was throwaway, and now it's in. So to say or ask the question, has Southern cuisine or soul food been appropriated for the masses? Is there oxtail taco out there somewhere? I have to say yes.
Yes, yes, yes. So chefs are behind the scene. I'm the front of the house. I address elephants in the room and I address them appropriately. And yes, if I'm bringing a plate of our cuisine, pig's feet or turkey wings or whatnot, we're gonna talk about it. Plus, I'm giving them drinks, and so we're gonna get in there. Mm-hmm. And there are times that we are around very intelligent conversations, and we can talk about the elephant in the room. To Chef saying about the rooter to the tutor. When I heard the word farm to table, I had no idea what that meant. I was like, what does that mean? And I was working with one of my favorite chefs in the world, and I was in the kitchen one day, and I went, Chef, I got a really strict question. Please don't laugh at me. He's like, shoot. And I'm like, what is farm to table? He puts his knife down, he looks at me, and he goes, you don't need to answer that question, because you know what that is. That's what you grew up doing. So my next question was, well, then if that's what I grew up doing, what was everyone else doing? I don't understand I didn't understand, and still to this day, I mean, I pay attention to that. When I hear the word farm to table or sustainability or organics, I'm like, what are you guys doing? Yeah. Again, to the prior question, these labels, it's food, and it's nature. It's just grass to glass or farm to table, as they want to label it. It's our cuisine.
Let's talk about your individual journeys. You are considered only African American mixologists. What
What does that mean?
Pressure. I have no idea how I got here. Bartending for years has been an in-between job, a college job. You know, I've always been told, even still to this day, when are you gonna get a real job? And I'm like, I'm making real money. I have a W-2. I don't understand why this isn't a real job. There's levels to everything. And I tell anyone that's coming underneath me or I train or just in general, there's levels to everything. And as I said, I've been drinking since a kid. I've been curious since I was a kid. And working in a restaurant along chefs with history and passion, not just cooks. I happen to be in the wing and in the window with the right people. And they were my brothers. There's this culture. These are people I could talk to all day long. And I'd be tasting and, of course, and watching and observing. And I knew it was happening. I know how kitchen works. I know how to cook as well. But I didn't understand on the other side that it was just as creative. And so I started snatching things out of the kitchen. You know, if they're poaching pears, I want the juice. If you're using this herb or this stem and you're going to toss it, I want the stem. Give me that. I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I want to take it. I never said no. I have stood in walk-ins and kitchens for hours and just stared at stuff because I don't know what it is. And you don't know it until you taste it. That's the joy of our job. We can't knock it until you put it in your mouth. And me being a lush at heart, proudly a lush at heart, I just wanted to know what these chefs were doing in the kitchen and how I could drink what they were doing. How can I drink it? And it was a joke for a long time, and the name Liquid Chef came out one day, like, look at you, and I'm in there in the lab, and of course that goes on with history and knowing other spirits and whatnot, but I just was curious and didn't stop drinking and figuring out how to make it work, knowing the right components. Little did I know I was working in a very high volume, high profile restaurant, and I never know who's sitting at my bar, and people were watching me, and the majority of those people watching me were not my same color. And so
you get asked questions a lot because of your race?
Absolutely, absolutely. I still get questions to this day on how do you know this stuff, as if I don't read. Where did you go to learn this? Who taught you this? My mom, my dad, myself. I'm at home in the lab all day long. Nothing's gross until I figure it out. So and then I have, of course, some mentors around me and some other leaders in the world that I've set at their bars, and I watch them, and then I go instantly, I did that differently. I probably would have shook that, or I probably would have stirred that, or I'd have probably threw some soul in it, or I would have probably named it something different, or I just started flipping it around, and this thing called social media started, and everything just went like that really, really, really fast, and here I am, known as one of them. There's a lot of them, though, but I'm an OG now. I've been told I'm an OG now, and I'm like, I'm not that old yet. But yes, curiosity didn't kill me, and I'm still there. So riding coattails of chefs is really how I got here, and obviously drinking.
Chef Booker, let me ask you this. You have over 2 decades, as we call it, experience in this. Someone listening may say, is it really such a journey for an African-American woman to be a chef? Is there really such a thing? There's a unique journey?
It's definitely a journey. I say it's a trail that a lot of which I had to blaze myself. And I have a friend and I'll talk and cry or frustrated and I'm like, I'm exhausted. I don't want to do this. I'm tired. And he'll say, you have to. You're blazing that trail for somebody else. Somebody did it for you. Now you have to widen that trail for somebody else. So yes, as a female in the kitchen who doesn't do pastry or make salads, it's a problem. For a black female in the kitchen who's just in the kitchen, there's a problem. And as Tiffany said, when I first came on the scene here, especially in Atlanta, it was, well, you cook soul food? Well, no, I don't. I'm a classically trained chef, a European trained chef. So I'd have to, what I call, roll out my pedigree all the time. Every time to say, yes, I have a degree, yes, I have a degree, yes, I have education, yes, I have experience.
Like you had to validate
every time and be pushy to get in the kitchen and to get on the hotline and to show what I had to do. And that's my temperament. So it wasn't an issue. I didn't feel like, oh, I can't do it. I took it as a challenge. Like, well, let me show you what I do. And yes, we're from Mississippi. And that's my foundation. And it's a strong foundation. And these are my people. And we were farmers. And I grew up raising hogs and chickens and milking the cow and making the butter and having the collard greens and watching my great uncles hunt and bring in the venison or the rabbit or the squirrel and cutting up hogs and salting it, you know, all of these things, which when we say farm to table, I'm like, but we always done that? Isn't that where food comes from, a farm? But it is a journey, and it's still a journey. And even now, having established myself, I feel, and have worked in the industry and written some books and done some great things, it's still always a push of, but I am qualified. And no, I don't just fry chicken. I can fry mean chicken, but I don't just fry chicken. Mm-hmm. And so meeting these lovely ladies, meeting Tiffany, who is so excited. And we talk about booze, because I love to infuse alcohol, and I make brandies and wine. So we can talk about that and cocktails. And then Deb, who has traveled, and we can talk about food. Our foods are so similar, but so different, so it's fun, and it's still exciting. So doing this type of event, this Cast Iron Chronicles, going to the Beard House, what? Yes, we're going. The only three black women to have gone, and we're excited to let everybody know.
Chef Ventress, you've heard what Tiffany and Chef Booker have said, and I imagine that is not foreign to you at all. You're the executive chef and owner of Twisted Soul Cookhouse and Pours, where this interview is taking place. Your journey to this present day, what's it been like?
Lonely. lonely. I had no culinary background when I started this. I just knew I had a passion for cooking. So, you know, I went to school, I did all of that, and actually the catalyst for me to dive into it was a strike. You know, I was a flight attendant, they went on strike, and that was a lot of control that someone else had over my livelihood. So as a result of it, I decided, let's go with this passion thing, see what happens. Up until recent, you know, I have been alone in this journey in terms of, you know, having another chef to talk to, another chef to bounce my ideas off of. I feel like, you know, I walk into rooms on a regular, and I'm sure we can all attest for this, there is no one that looks like us. You know, there's sometime often, people won't even talk to me. You know, so, you know, I just keep going one foot in front of the other. I learned real quick, you know, that I had to depend on myself and my family to help me to get where I was trying to go. And it's been step by step by step. You know, I started in 94. You know, so it's taken a long time. You know, I've paid my dues to get to this point. You know, but there are times that I am in that room with others and they test me. You know, and honestly, I'm at that. It'll be simple things. You're doing lamb. How'd you prepare that? So is it New Zealand? Australian, domestic, as if I don't know. You know, I know what you're doing. You're testing me to see, do I really know what I'm talking about? And I do know. I do know. You know, I have traveled. You know, I am well versed in what I do. You know, and I'm constantly trying to learn more. You know, constantly. So meeting these ladies is like the biggest breath of fresh air for me. It brings tears to my eyes to finally know, you know, I've got other people who know what I've gone through, because they've gone through it also, who we can talk to about the challenges and who we can help to keep going up, you know, to the next levels. So we are hand in hand, you know, and we're gonna go as far up as we can get.
I want to talk about this collaborative, the trio. We'll just call you all the trio, and being invited to the James Beard House. What can you even put into words what that means? And although someone said to me, Rose, this is a really big deal, there's a side of me that says, it's 2017. Maybe it shouldn't be a big deal by now.
Any thoughts?
Well, we weren't exactly invited. We said, hey, we'd like to come. And they said, well, it's by invitation only, but we would love to have you. So that works for me. I met, I think, Deborah maybe coming, or maybe before she opened Twisted Soul here at this location, and I came to check it out, and it was beautiful, and she's so gracious, and I did an event in Savannah, and I look up, and she's there, and that was huge, because we don't always support one another like we should, and for her to drive down, I was like, wow, and she's here. And I see Tiffany at events, and she always has a smile and always has a cocktail for me and a hug. And that's huge because sometimes you go to an event and nobody talks to you. So when we were interviewed independently for an article, and I was like, man, this is like a conversation we need to have. We've all had it, but it's never really been in the forefront because then you're complaining or you're whining and you should be happy to be here. And so I had just come back from the James Beard Foundation Chef's Boot Camp, and it was wonderful. And so I contacted them and said, hey, here's an article. It's a conversation we should have. And they said, you know what? It is, and we need to have it. And I said, well, how about we have it at the Beard House? And they said, well, how about we do? And so they're excited, and they're geeked up for us to be there for women, all three, and women of color. It's unprecedented. Nobody's done it. So here we go. So it is a big deal, and it is 2017, and it shouldn't be, but it is. And we want everyone to know that it's huge because the road is hard, and the trail is bumpy, and is lonely, and sometimes you're the only one there all the time. And it's not often that you get kindred spirits that can be with you to help lift you there. So this is big, and I want everyone to know until they say, could you please stop talking about it? And I'll be like, no, let me tell you where I'm going. So we're excited. Oh, wow. So James Beard, cooking at the James Beard House is like the Grammys, you know, of the music industry. When I first started, that wasn't nowhere in the plan. You know, I could not see that ever happening. And for us to get to this point, you know, I do think we are definitely, you know, now I can accept we are paving this way. And I want other people to see us. I want, you know, African-American women. I want women, you know, I want African-American men, you know, to see, yeah, you can do this. You can do this, you know. We're coming at it, you know, from different places, you know. Sometimes we don't have the financial resources, you know, we don't have the backing, but we can still get there. And I think there's some shortcuts. I hope no one has to take that same journey that we've taken, you know. And it's been a great ride, you know, but it has been bumpy, you know, and hopefully we've smoothed the road a little bit for those that are coming behind us. I am loving that we're doing this together. The unity and the solidarity just of these three African-American women working together, you know, is a big deal. You know, ego's not in the way. You know, we are all joining together to accomplish this goal successfully. And that's what matters to us. You know, and I think we're all banking on we coming back to the James Beard House. Mm-hmm. This is not gonna be a one-time thing. It's like, it is my belief that once we finish, you know, James Beard will be asking us, when is the next time? Can we go ahead and get you on the schedule? Yeah. You know, that's what I'm looking forward to.
The James Beard House is the Grammys. The Oscars. It is the highlight. I have been to the James Beard House. I had the pleasure of making cocktails alongside of one of my favorite chefs, Chef DeWayne Nutter. And I remember being asked to be there and being like, we're going to the James Beard House? We made it. But it was definitely, you know, showcasing his incredible talent, his kitchen, the fact that we were doing beyond what we should have been doing at that time. We were paving a way, you know, and we were in the airport at the time, and for him to receive such an accolade, I was just in awe, and complete awe. I mean, again, coattail, I'm the bartender, and I'm comfortable saying that, I'm just the bartender. But we need the dishwasher to make this happen too. So I started not feeling like that, and so full circle. I'm going by myself this time, but not by myself. I'm going for myself with my sisters, and I'm going because I'm supposed to be there. I'm not going there with the same mentality, like I'm just going to help. I'm just gonna go and just pair up some cocktails and pour up some wine and stay out of the way. I'm going there to make it happen, to stand tall. Not many mixologists are really seen in the Jamesport House. This is a chef, this is a culinary accolade and a culinary step. So as a bartender or a drinker, a lush, I'm proud to say that all the time, to be even respected in the culinary world means more to me than we could be cooking at your mom's house tomorrow. I'm gonna be like, we did that. You know, I'm still proud of being considered and respected in the culinary world. So this means a lot on a female level, a black level, a bartender level, a paving the way level, a full circle level, a drinking level. I mean, I'm losing it every time. She'll still, and I still can't believe we're going. Like it's surreal. And we will continue, and it won't just be James Beard. We may cook at the Grammys, who knows? The real Grammys, the Oscars, I don't know. I see it, you know, way beyond, but the recognition from our peers and our industry, I'm looking forward to those brag rights. I'm looking forward to kicking butt.
I'm gonna wrap this up by saying, remember when we started this segment and I asked you all to say your name and then to fill in the blank, food is, and you mentioned family, the great equalizer, love, and it just dawned on me, that's what you all share as a trio.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Tiffany, Chef Booker, Chef Ventures, thank you all so much for spending time with me. Thank you for being so gracious with your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for coming in, for speaking, for thinking it was important enough to have a conversation with us.
And thank you for asking the hard questions. A lot of times everybody glosses over and what's your favorite recipe? What's your favorite restaurant? Let's talk about some real things. So thank you for allowing us to do so.
Thank you for the comfort. Thank you for, again, allowing us to be ourselves and having the great questions and not just be standard and we cook, we drink, we party, but thanks for being curious about what we do. It means everything.
That's it for today's special edition of Closer Look, produced by Candace Wheeler. Our engineer is Elizabeth Eads. Our executive producer is Christine Dempsey. As always, a special thanks to our digital services crew. If you missed any of today's program, you can go online at wabe.org/closerlook, and you can also listen to Closer Look weeknights at 9. We're back tomorrow at 1 for another edition of Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. Stay tuned to 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR.
My name is Ann Nguyen, and I live in Stone Mountain. I like the shops. I like artists from there. I like the attractions and Stone Mountain Park. They have activities for kids. You know, they can practice and familiarize themselves with art, like pottery, painting. If I could change one thing about Stone Mountain, it would be traffic jam. It's really bad there.
Support for WABE comes from Capital One. You can open a Capital One savings account and discover more about Capital One savings online at CapitalOne.com/ReimagineAtlanta. Capital One, welcome to Banking Reimagined.
Are you tired of that car that won't start? Why not donate it to WABE and support the programs that you enjoy? Learn more about WABE's vehicle donation program at wabe.org/cars or call 1-866-901-WABE. And thanks.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Many of those crammed into shelters across Texas will have to rebuild their homes, and federal officials say they'll need help.
The need to volunteer is going to take place over the next couple years, okay? And the need to volunteer is in, let me remind you, 50 counties right now.
Our continuing coverage of Harvey. That's next time on Here and Now. This afternoon at 3 on 90.1 WABE.